candid shot. We speaking on things you not. Just press play and let it rock. Welcome to the candid shot. Whoa. Welcome to the candid shot. We speaking on things you not. Just press play and let it rock. Welcome to the candid shot. Whoa. Feel like we going through mad things. Gotta keep it real when they choose not. We gon' talk about it when the news drop. Welcome to the show where you know we don't fake this. Keep your opinion to yourself if it don't make sense.
Hola, Podcast Nation. It is your girl, Candidly Kristen, and this is The Candid Shop, your number one destination for candid conversations. Toxic forgiveness is a really, really hot topic right now. So today I am sitting down for a candid chat about it with counselor, Reiki master, and founder of Illuminated Path Counseling, Michelle Agopsowitz. And I hope I said that right. Welcome, 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 Michelle.
You said it perfectly.
I have it spelled out phonetically on my notes, so I didn't mess it up. Ooh, I am really like super excited to be having this chat since I first heard this term toxic forgiveness that was coined by Nedra Glover Tawab. And she defines toxic forgiveness as the unhealthy way people pretend to be unharmed over it or forgetful of an offense in order to keep the peace or to avoid being labeled bitter, scorned, or someone who holds a grudge. I literally have been chomping at the bit to have this chat.
Yeah, yeah. And I would add to that definition maybe a little bit, because trauma is sort of my jam, strange as it is to say that.
Okay.
That I think it's a bit of a trauma reaction as well. That we don't want to be, we don't want to be too much.
Right.
We don't want anyone to see our woundedness.
Mm.
And so we kind of bypass the whole experience. And I think as a society, we somehow feel this is a prerequisite, that we have to forgive someone.
Yes, yes. And stuff down how we really, really
feel.
Because all our lives we hear, you know, forgiveness is for you. It's not for the other person. And not forgiving is just holding on to pain and anger. But I really think that we are generally, as a society, pressured, manipulated, bullied, whatever you want to call it, into, and I'm doing air quotes, forgiving somebody before we're really, really ready, if ever. So I have a Facebook group called Candidly Speaking that's tied to the podcast, and I do polls in there a lot. So I did a poll, and the question was, have you ever felt pressure to forgive someone before you were really ready? Mm-hmm. And of the people who responded, overwhelmingly, 67% said yes, 32% said nope, I forgive when I'm ready, and 1% said maybe, not sure, what is it?
Yeah, I feel like forgiveness is this, it's both organic, it just unfolds and happens, and we have to work on it. But just from this poll that you're saying, what strikes me about this is that there's some shame about not forgiving. Like somehow we're not a good person if we can't get there.
Right, right, right.
And that we need to be the bigger person. And I totally agree that yes, forgiveness is for us, but in our own time. Mm-hmm. And there are also things that are unforgivable. There are nasty parts of humanity that we don't have to forgive.
Thank you. Thank you. And that was my next question, and you kind of answered it, is do you think personally that forgiveness is always necessary in order to move forward?
No. And I think, you know, I was struck by this idea that I think these things intersect in a really way, that we can have sacred anger.
Mm-hmm.
And sacred anger to me is the things we should be mad about in life. So we should be mad about racism. We should be mad about misogyny. We should be mad about war. These things under no circumstance, sexual abuse, physical abuse, these things under no circumstance are okay.
Right.
And so we should have some sacred anger about those. And there are situations where this is so wounding for us that there's absolutely no way we have to forgive. If we want to forgive and we come to forgiveness, then that's a beautiful place to be.
Yes, yes.
But we're not less of a person if we don't get there. We're not less spiritual if we don't get there. We're not less good. We're not going to, you know, you're not going to finish this lifetime and somehow you're going to have to come back and do it again because, whoops, you didn't forgive.
Right. Yep. I agree. I agree. So how do you believe that toxic forgiveness and relationships and all relationships, romantic, familial, professional, how do they intersect?
Yeah, I think it really comes up to this place where most families and society and professionally, mm-hmm. most of us really don't like conflict. And even if we're okay with conflict, we don't like the hard emotions. And we definitely don't like to see somebody that we love and care about suffering. So I think we force people into this toxic forgiveness out of our own manipulation of the situation and needing to not watch someone else suffer.
Got it.
So in a really strange way, it's actually not about the person that's been impacted by what you're being asked to forgive. It's all the people surround them that say, oh, that's so hard to watch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I would really like them to forgive. Right. So that I don't have to watch this other person suffering anymore.
Right, right. Do you, because I don't necessarily think that not forgiving somebody is always, and this is, I'm making really general statements, always detrimental to the person who's being asked to forgive. Like, you know, the whole notion that if you don't forgive, you're just giving them control and holding on to the pain and the anger. But I don't believe that's always necessarily true.
No, I don't think so either. No, I don't think so. And I think it's such a personalized thing. Mm-hmm. And yet in our discomfort, we do make these statements. And same with anything. Like when someone's grieving, we make these blanket statements.
Right, right.
When someone's going through a divorce, we make these sort of the platitudes we give. And I think around forgiveness, the platitudes are exactly what you just said, right?
Right,
like set
right.
yourself free. Don't give your power away.
Right.
But I think it's entirely possible to not give your power away. Mm-hmm. And to also say, I don't forgive that person.
Right.
I also think it's okay to say, I don't forgive them. And I'm also at a place where I'm fairly neutral around it.
Right. Okay. Okay. That's interesting. So toxic forgiveness or appeasement, which do you think is more accurate in our conversation? Like when somebody is kind of pressured into forgiving and they're like, okay, I forgive you. Is that really forgiveness? Because that to me just feels more like appeasement.
Oh yeah. I think it's appeasement and I think it's people pleasing. And I think mm-hmm. it's like, I'll just tell you what I want you to hear so that you'll go away and leave me
yeah,
alone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
So do you think that more people are pushed into forgiveness by the offender or by their circle?
You know, I think probably it depends on the situation. Of course, I don't want to make blanket statements. Like if
right.
it's within a family.
Okay.
I think, and you're seeing this person all the time.
Yeah.
Then I think there's definitely both.
Okay.
Right? You're getting a lot of pressure to forgive the family member, but you're also getting pressure from the culture of the family.
Yeah.
That says we want our equilibrium back.
Yeah.
We don't want
yeah.
this conflict within the family.
We don't want this too messy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So let's just calm this down, right?
Right.
So, but if it's sort of somebody outside of someone that you see all the time, then I think the pressure comes potentially from your social network that you're relying on to process what this is. And
yeah.
in their discomfort, they're offering solutions and advice and trying to fix it. Because I think rather than, and we're all guilty of this, myself included, being a counselor,
mm-hmm.
I think rather than being able to hold space and just witness to the suffering and just bear witness to that suffering,
right,
is so much harder than trying to fix it and offer, you know, advice and solutions.
Mm-hmm,
and
because
mm-hmm. that's what we're sort of patterned to do too, is, well, have you tried this? And have you tried this? And
right.
have you just forgiven? And,
right.
and I think we think like, you know, I think it's the same as anything. You talk to people who are depressed, they uh-huh. often hear people say, well, you know, just decide to be happy.
Yeah.
And it's like,
I know.
Well, You know, you think I hadn't thought of that, right? So I think it's the same thing with talks of forgiveness, that often in our very well-meaning suggestions to help people.
Yes.
We say, well, you know, have you thought about forgiveness? And I think as the person who receives that, it's a bit of an eye roll for me.
Right.
Because I'm like, well, yeah, of course. If it was that easy, of course I would have just done that. Right?
Yep.
And I think forgiveness is this very organic moving in and out, because we can come close to touching forgiveness. And then the person might do the thing that triggered us again.
Or and something so real then, close to it.
Yeah. And so then we move away from forgiveness again. Right. So I don't think it's an end state either. I don't think it's something that we just arrive at as this epiphany and forgiveness is just now a thing.
Okay.
So, you know, I can get to the place of forgiveness because it's best for me and all of these other things until that person does the thing again.
Right. And then it's like, seriously?
Yeah. Cause it's hard to forgive if they haven't done their part in learning the lesson as to why it hurt you in the first place.
Absolutely. Change behavior is.
Yeah.
So how do you define forgiveness, not toxic forgiveness, but just forgiveness in its general sense?
I've often said around forgiveness that I actually don't think there's a very good English word that really embodies what this is.
Okay.
Because I think forgiveness, just in the tense and the usage of the word, really does seem like it is something you will just decide to do and you will arrive there.
And then everything is all one.
And then everything will fine. I think it's the same as we use the word like healed.
Okay.
We're not ever healed. We're always healing.
Okay.
Right. So we have this very, you know, it's one of these things where we say, you know, I don't want to adult right now. Because part of being an adult is that you're constantly unpacking your stuff, looking at it, putting it away. Then it comes out again because we get triggered. And we look at it again, like forgiveness is not a one and done thing.
Yeah, I agree.
It's something that we're always working at. And another circumstance might come up in our life and we're like, oh, you know, I thought I'd forgiven. And I need to look at it again.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And I think that's okay.
I think that's okay. And I think this is one of the, but I think we create more suffering when we think it's a one and done thing as well.
Yes. Yes.
Because then we introduce shame again, thinking, well, what's wrong with me that somehow it's back again?
Yes. Yes.
Right.
And I must not have done the forgiveness thing right.
Yeah. Yeah. And it plays along with all of the toxic positivity, any of the uncomfortable emotions that we have in our life is we want to bypass them.
Yeah.
And societally, we're really encouraged to do that. And we're praised for doing that.
Right. Yes, yes.
Because nobody wants to admit that we're all manipulative, that we're all resentful sometimes, that we're all angry sometimes, that we're all anxious sometimes. We don't want to go there.
Right.
Right?
I agree. So talk to me about, you're a counselor. You deal with people regularly. And talk to me about what you see as some of the mental, emotional, physical manifestations of toxic forgiveness when it happens, when somebody has been pushed, pulled, bullied, whatever, into forgiving someone before they were really, really ready.
So I think it really shows up as a denial of self, and however that comes up for you,
okay,
because you're being silenced. So for some people, it really shows up as depression.
Okay.
They're like, I'm just going to retreat from everybody. I don't want to do this. I need to go inward. Right.
Yeah.
For some people, it shows up as anxiety around every function where you're going to be with these people, where you're expected to pretend.
Right. Okay.
For other people, it's going to show up as anger and resentment and bitterness, as we said, which is why everyone tries to get you to, but it actually makes you more bitter.
Right.
So in the statement of saying, well, stop being so bitter and get over it.
Right.
We actually make people more resentful and bitter.
Right.
But then I also think it physically shows up for a lot of people. So it also shows up for people in like stomach aches and headaches and that kind of physical manifestation, because they're starting to dread going into any of these situations where this might be expected of them.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So it also shows up socially. So people start to isolate. It also shows up mentally in terms of just our thought patterns. So when we're expected to go to this toxic forgiveness, the opposite actually happens. So we end up thinking about the situation more, ruminating about the situation more, thinking about it more, going over and over and over again.
Yep.
Our brain's trying to do what it's actually meant to do, but it's scanning, saying, why can't I find the solution for this to just get over it?
Yep.
But the issue is, and why it's ruminating in your mind in that way, is because you're being forced into something you're not ready to do.
Yep. I agree.
Yeah.
That was interesting. So Michelle, what does healthy forgiveness look like for you? Mm-hmm. Say I'm your client and I'm in there and I'm like, you know, my mom and all these people, and this happened, and I felt pressured into forgiving that person and trying to make a way forward. And what would you tell them is a healthy version of forgiveness?
Yeah, well, I think now we lead into boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
So also then being able to say, you know, this is where I'm at in my forgiveness journey,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not there yet.
Right.
But I'm working on it. So I think sometimes we need to let people know too, like, it isn't that I'm not working on it.
Right.
Right. I guess I'll give myself as a situation here. So I have a history of sexual abuse.
Okay.
Went from childhood sexual abuse. And within my family, I was absolutely had the gift of being believed that this had happened. So that was one good resiliency factor.
Yes.
For me. Yeah. But my family is incredibly conflict averse. And so it was very much, okay, but let's not tell anyone. Let's not create any waves. Let's not get to any of this place. Let's just, you know, we're just going to continue. You're going to have to go to these family functions, see these people, and, you know, it's okay. And that was the wounding part for me, was that I had to know that that people believed me, but I had to continue. That I should probably move forward. So the most wounding part for me was, okay, so now we have to pretend that it's okay and that you've forgiven and that everybody's okay and we just need to go forward.
Right, right.
And
that's tough.
As an adult, when I was doing my own therapy around this, what I realized, I was doing eye movement therapy around sexual abuse.
Okay.
And I burst out laughing in the middle of this therapy session. This was my moment of forgiveness. So 30 years later, I discovered my forgiveness on my own terms. I burst out laughing because I realized the sexual abuse had nothing to do with me.
Right.
I was just there and available.
Mm-hmm.
And it was strangely hilarious to me because I'd spent 35 years of my life thinking this was all my fault and that I had to forgive it and that my family expected it mm-hmm. and that we weren't going to talk about it and mm-hmm. all these sorts of things. And I realized it had nothing to do with me.
Right.
And that was my moment of forgiveness because I realized it wasn't my shame.
Oh, that's awesome. That is awesome.
But I mean, it happened to me when I was about 11 or so.
Right.
I wasn't ready until 35.
Mm-hmm.
And at 42, I can talk to other people and I'm like, oh, okay, but I don't forgive that aspect of it.
Right, right. Yeah.
Because it's still not okay.
Right. Absolutely. So, <not. laughs>
So I can forgive and to set myself free, as we say, right?
Right.
But it's not ever going to be okay. And ever. I'm not ever going to forget. And it isn't ever not going to have had an impact in shaping who I am in good, bad, and ugly ways.
Yes, yes, I agree.
Right.
So Nidra Tawab, the person who first coined this phrase, toxic forgiveness, this is what she says a healthy version of forgiveness looks like. It looks like acceptance of the event, mm-hmm. learning to let go of some of the anger and feel less consumed by it. Just because we don't forgive a person, we can still be kind and pleasant. We, and I'm guessing she means society, we believes that unforgiveness is being mean to people. Mm-hmm. But you can be kind and not like people.
Yes. And I think this is, and I think this is where truly healthy forgiveness comes in, is this neutrality.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it's like, it's not that it's not okay, but I can sit in a room with this person and coexist with them
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and be kind and be compassionate maybe right. even understand why right. their nastiness caused something that needed to be forgiven.
Right.
Because of course their woundedness is what causes hurt, right? Hurt people hurt people.
Right.
But I think it is this neutrality to say exactly that. It's like, but I don't have to like it and I don't have to like you, but I can still sit here in a neutral place with my own boundaries intact.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'm not a mean person because I won't forgive you or don't feel that that is what I need.
Yeah.
Because it ultimately is about what the person who suffered the offense needs. And if forgiveness is not what they need to move forward, then people should stop pushing them to that.
Yeah, it's not a prerequisite.
It's not.
No, it's not at all. And you know, it comes down to all of these things too, where it's the offended person and we don't have to forgive something.
That's right.
We don't. But it doesn't mean that it has to continue to destroy our lives.
That's right.
But I think there's a societal idea that if we don't forgive, somehow it is.
Yes.
And I think for women especially, we have this good girl thing.
Yes.
So being a good girl, we've got to be nice. We've got to be kind. Being nice and kind, though, doesn't mean we can't have a boundary.
Exactly. Right?
And not forgiving doesn't mean we're a raging bitch.
Right. Yeah.
And that we're somehow wounded and we need to, but we're so socialized to make things okay for other people, right? Yes. Like, oh, you know, Uncle Bobby, he makes you uncomfortable, but go hug him anyways.
Yeah.
So we also really teach women to cross, like as little girls, we teach mm-hmm. them to cross their boundaries all the time.
Yeah.
To be kind, right?
I agree.
And as a white woman, I'm not going to speak to this, but I'm curious about this for you, Kristen.
Okay.
When it comes to being a person of color,
mm-hmm.
how often are you often asked to forgive something to make general society feel better for their racism and internalized and all oppression and things like that? Yeah.
All the time. Yeah. The microaggressions happen continually. And we're always, as a BIPOC person, expected to be bigger, you know, let it go. And but why? They didn't mean it. Well, their intentions and the effect of whatever they said or did are two entirely different things. So.
Yeah. And this is a really good example, again, of how you're expected to forgive because you're supposed to make the offender in society, and air quotes here for me, white people,
right,
feel better.
Right. Yeah. That's a very good example. That is a very good example. And the contrast, because color aside, women in general have to do this, but mm-hmm. particularly African-American women, because God forbid we be the angry Black woman in the room.
Yes.
You know what
yes.
I mean? And everybody seeming to forget that this person just reached out and ran their fingers through my locks and didn't ask. Mm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, yeah, it shows up in a lot of ways like that for people of color.
Yeah. And as women, as you say, we are socialized to sort of stand there and take it to some degree so that we're not being rude. And I don't, and not that men don't have toxic forgiveness as well, but I think that when men assert their boundaries around this,
mm-hmm.
they're seen as assertive.
Yes.
We're seen as angry, bitchy, aggressive.
Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then what happens is I can actually feel it. Like it rise, that sacred anger rises up from mm-hmm. my belly. And I'm like, oh no, no, I'm not forgiving now.
Right? Yep. Your face gets hot and it's like, okay.
Yeah.
And then you feel, and then the offended person feels the need to, you know, push down that, mm-hmm. that anger, that sacred anger. And I love that term, by the way, I'm going to start using it, to just push it down. Just so that we don't come across as bitter, angry, bitchy. And
yes.
I think that is not an effective way to manage any offense that has occurred or any kind of forgiveness that may or may not happen.
Yeah. Which I think is so different, if I can segue for a minute around mm-hmm. the apology.
Mm.
Which I think is also such an integral part of forgiveness or toxic forgiveness,
right?
Is I think we're also not taught to genuinely have critical thought and reflect around our peace in why we might need to apologize to someone. Mm-hmm. And how we can actually make a genuine apology and then follow up that up with our behavior.
Yes, thank you. Yes.
Versus, yes. Well, I'm Canadian, so I'm going to say we're classically known for just wandering around saying thank you and sorry for every single thing.
You're the fourth Canadian person that has said that. I'm like, really? Is it a real thing like that?
Yeah, it's a real cultural thing. We're just, you know, like, it's like we apologize for our existence. I don't know. We wander around and somebody looks at you, you're like, oh, I'm sorry. And you get a little close to me, like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, thank you. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I'm thank you. And eventually it loses. And I've heard in my travels, other countries have said, you know, I don't know if I can trust you guys because you're always apologizing for something right. that, you know, we're not sure that you actually did.
Right.
And so I think then the apology also becomes this really empty gesture.
Yes.
To just make the conflict go away. Versus you can tell when someone is genuinely like, oh my God, I am so sorry. That's not what I meant.
Yes.
You can tell when it's genuine and you can tell when it's trying to just shine the spotlight off them and move back into toxic forgiveness.
Yep. Yep. And mm-hmm. I agree with that 100%. The best apology to me is change behavior.
Yeah.
If somebody really doesn't understand why it wasn't okay for you to touch my hair and they apologize, but then they follow up with questions and to try to get an understanding about why that was inappropriate. Mm-hmm. That means so much to me if I'm the person that's offended, because it, you know, it kind of shows that you really were genuinely sorry, uninformed, whatever it was, and that, but you're seeking to not be that going forward.
Yes. Versus the apology that says, I'm sorry, but.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they go on to defend.
Yes.
Yes. Something that isn't really defendable.
Defendable. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So listen, I want to segue a little bit and I want you to talk to me about Illuminated Path Counseling. Tell me the why, the what, and the how of what it is you do.
Yeah. I think as a counselor, probably the same as you, Kristen, our purpose in life often comes from our own experience. Mm-hmm. And so my private practice really came out of me being diagnosed with an autoimmune condition as a result of some of my sexual abuse.
Okay.
And my healing process that came out of that, of realizing I needed to find some semblance of self-love. Mm. And so the name Illuminated Path comes from this idea of my own dark night of the soul. So the darkest depths of the moments of my life where I didn't know if I would go on.
Right.
There was always this path that just illuminated a little bit further ahead of me, a little bit further ahead of me. And so I'm incredibly passionate about sharing the many things that I have done in my darkest moments to help other people. So within our profession of counseling, we're often discouraged from having social media, that kind of thing. But I started thinking about this idea that I wanted a YouTube channel and social media where I could share little tidbits of mental health for free.
Yeah.
Because it's not always accessible to people either.
Yes.
So I wanted to give people strategies. I wanted to give my clients strategies. And then what came out of that is I started developing a trauma recovery course and a mindfulness through the senses course, because I wanted to share with people what I had learned, not only professionally from many, many years of school, mm-hmm. but also personally what I discovered worked for me, which of course might not work for someone else, right? Which is fine. But it's really, in many ways, and this might sound very dramatic, it's kind of a love song, love poem to myself, to my younger self, and the unfolding of the change that I want to see in the world. Because as a social worker as well,
right.
You know, social workers don't just look at the individual aspect of it too. I'm also really passionate about, okay, so trauma is the root of what causes racism and sexism and just nastiness in the world. It also is what causes us to be okay with destroying our planet and destroying mm-hmm. each other and blowing each other up and doing all of these other really things. And if we can heal and be comfortable with ourselves and love ourselves, then we have no need to go out and destroy other people.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. So, you know, I was poking around your site and I thought, oh, this is really nice. I love the name Illuminated Path. And now that I know the backstory, I love it even more.
You're so sweet.
So if you could give me your last thoughts and speak directly to the listeners about toxic forgiveness, specifically to the person who has been offended, and then give your thoughts to the people around them who may unwittingly be pushing them to forgive before they're ready.
Yeah. So the first thing I would say to the person who's being asked to engage in toxic forgiveness, to just take a breath and come back to your body. Call yourself home. Because what happens when we're asked to do these things is suddenly, this is going to be a stance from a bit of a Reiki master perspective as well here, is that we start to give our energy in little fragments out.
Yes.
To this person and this person and this person. And then suddenly we're not sure where we stand in our body. So come back home to yourself. We can do this through the breath. We can do this through a really nice thing that I like to do is I like to tap underneath my collarbones, which is stimulates the vagus nerve.
Okay.
And I say out loud, I am Michelle Agopsowicz and only Michelle Agopsowicz. And I call all of my energy back. And I send everyone else's energy and agenda back with love. And I'll say that three times so that I can come back into my center, my heart space, my gut reaction so that I am doing what's best for me and not what's best for everybody else.
That's awesome.
And, you know, just the way we are wired as humans, we need to do that over and over and over. I do it constantly throughout the day. I come back to myself. Who am I? What is my opinion? What do I need?
Okay.
Not what everybody else needs. And even if you, and then once we learn how to do that, the next step that's a little bit less comfortable is being able to, in a really kind and compassionate way, set our boundary.
Yeah.
So this might sound something like, you know, I appreciate your perspective on that, but I'm not ready to forgive yet. And that's okay because I'm working on it.
Right.
And it doesn't, it's not, you know, it's not going to change anything for me to rush through the process that I'm needing to go through. So, and I would almost come up with a little mantra, a little phrase that I would practice ahead of time about what is my boundary statement.
Okay.
So something like, thank you for your perspective on that. I'm not ready to do it.
Sure.
Or whatever that might be. Short, easy to remember so that it becomes a bit of a muscle memory to say, this is my boundary statement around this.
Right.
And you're basically saying, I've heard you and I respect you. And I need you to respect me.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And then if we turn that to the people who are asking for the toxic forgiveness from someone.
Yes.
I would actually ask everyone listening, where do you, as much as you don't like it, where do you also do it to other people? Because we probably all do.
Yep.
And what is the agenda in that? Are you feeling uncomfortable yourself with the intensity of the feeling or the conflict or, you know, whatever's happening in that? And so you're actually asking this of somebody else because of your own discomfort.
Right.
Because that's usually what it is.
Yep.
If it's a genuine need to help, then it's about being able to hold space and bear witness to that pain without trying to fix it. And if you do, as we all do, stumble in and say, well, have you tried this? Have you forgiven yet? Because we'll all do it. It's fine. We're, you know, then also catch yourself in that apology and say, oh, you know, I am so sorry. I just offered a solution. And I'm aware that that's probably not what you're looking for right now.
Well, yeah.
And it just backs it up and neutralizes it again. Because we have to be able to just sit and not have to rush people through it.
Yeah. We love to do, and not just be. Sometimes you just need to be and let other people be at their pace because it's their pace. It was their offense. They were the one that was harmed. So,
So let me, I'm just, I'm loving this conversation because this is something I haven't thought about before. So what if holding space is the ultimate act of radical nonviolence? Because what we're doing when we're asking someone else to forgive before they're ready, or we're offering advice or solutions before they're wanting to hear those advice or solutions, right. What we're doing is basically we're saying, the way you're doing it is wrong, and mm-hmm. I have all the answers for you. And I mm-hmm. don't know about you, but anyone else who's ever come in and tried to do my work for me didn't get me further along in the process.
No.
And anytime I've gone to somebody I love very much and tried to show them the pattern and error of their ways, I am actually robbing them of the experience and opportunity to heal that themselves.
And to learn whatever lesson is in there.
Yes. And so is it a radical act of nonviolence to not offer solutions because you're no longer stealing someone else's opportunity to heal? Or not heal.
Or yes.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's the thing. We just want, when you love somebody, you want them to be okay.
Yeah.
And you see them and to you, to the observer, you're like, oh, if they would just forgive, they would feel better. But you don't know that. That may be true for you, but we're talking about them. So let them have their process, whatever that looks like.
Which is completely different than how we're socialized. We're socialized to wander around and offer people advice. And so, but if we stay in our own lane.
Yes.
You know, it's like, no, actually, that's more kind.
It really is.
But it feels powerless because we're like, know. Oh, I'm not doing anything to help this person.
And because you are. Don't know how to hold space for people. We don't know when people are grieving, same thing. We got to come in there and you know, offer ways so they can speed up their process or whatever. And instead of just showing up and shutting up.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's okay if a process takes 6 months, 3 days, or 10 years, or a lifetime. It's fine.
Yep. I love that. That last part about the radical act of nonviolence, just holding space. That's what we should be learning.
We should be learning that in school, family. Learning this, like, this should be parenting 101, right? But we are all taught to fix and take away pain, which actually doesn't take any pain away.
Nope. Mm-mm. Because stuffing down your feelings is never a healthy thing, ever.
No. And it pops up in weird and wild and mysterious ways.
Yes, indeed. Yes, it does. Oh, my gosh, Michelle, this has been amazing. I knew it would be, though. I knew it would be. So before we wrap up, I just want you to tell my listeners how they can connect with you and Illuminated Path Counseling if they would like to.
Yeah, so probably the easiest way is on YouTube, Facebook, or Instagram. I'm at Illuminated Path Counseling. You can also jump onto my website, illuminatedpathcounseling.com, and there's the links to all of my social media as well as my online courses. Awesome. I would love to have you come check me out.
Yes. And guys, you know that all of Michelle and Illuminated Path's contact info will be in the show notes with clickable links that'll take you where you want to go and the course that she's... Tell me about the course.
Yeah, so I've got two at the moment. I'm hoping to get a whole bunch more out this year. So the first one is the Trauma Recovery Method. It's about rediscovering resiliency through mindfulness. So it's looking at the patterns of coping that you have in your life as a result of what's come out of trauma. And I'll make a little plug here about trauma. Most people think trauma is these horrible, horrific things that happen to us, which do. Trauma is essentially anything that overwhelms our system. So that can be microaggressions, that can be bullying, that can be divorce and grief and loss. It could be a car accident. It could be just feeling like you don't belong in the world. Mm. All your nervous system reacts as if that's traumatizing. So what the course looks at is your patterns of coping strategies, your family of origin, and then how to come back to your body and heal some of that trauma through your nervous system.
Okay.
Yeah. And then I've got a mindfulness through the senses, which is just a 10-day meditation challenge to come back to your body and integrate through the senses and in grounding and things like that.
So. Nice. I'm a big believer in grounding.
Yeah.
Huge
believer. Over and over and over.
Over and over. Yes. Yep. Oh my gosh. Michelle Agopsowitz, and I had to look up, so I said your name right again. I can't thank you enough for this conversation. This has been so much more than I thought it would be. You brought so many new and interesting perspectives into the topic of toxic forgiveness, because I've researched it but hearing some of the things you said, I'm like, okay, I love that. They're all going to be in the show notes too. So,
Well, and thank you, Kristen, for just being a beautiful, gracious host, for just being changed in the world of just having these amazing conversations.
Thank you. Thank you. It is what I am called to do. And so I am answering that call. So guys, again, Michelle and Illuminated Path Counseling, social media and website links will be in the show notes along with some key takeaways. I'm not going to put everything in there because I want you to listen to the whole conversation. And don't forget to check out my channel, www.thecandidshop.com, Candid with a K. On all social, we are at the Candid Shop Podcast, again, Candid with a K. I thank you again, Michelle, so very much for giving me this little bit of your day. You could have been doing anything else, and you're here with me and my listeners, so I thank you again.
Thank you, Kristen.
All right, guys. Until next time, I want you all to keep it safe, keep it healthy, and keep it candid.